Call the Legacy Finance Committee meeting to order. Good morning, everyone. Representative Lee, have you had an opportunity to take a peek at the minutes for the March 8th meeting? If so, would you be willing to move them?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes for March 8th.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Any questions in regards to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Well, we're coming from session. We're just kind of gathering, and it looks like we've got great attendance. Thank you, members, for getting over so quick, and thank you, staff, for being ready. Representative Bierman, welcome this morning, and I'll move that House File 470 be laid over for possible inclusion. Go ahead and tell us about what you're working on, Representative Bierman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just wanted to talk briefly about the House File 470 for the Minnesota Zoo. The legacy amendment dollars are hard at work at the Minnesota Zoo. Although located in my district, I'm proud of the Minnesota Zoo's statewide outreach. Today, you'll hear from Director Frawley about how the Minnesota Zoo uses arts and culture heritage funding to serve all of Minnesota in ways that are unique to the Minnesota Zoo. Many of these offerings are value adds to the guest experience, meaning they are included with zoo admission. With legacy funding, the zoo is expanding its demographic outreach and becoming a more inclusive destination, which will be further illustrated by Director Frawley's testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bierman, and welcome, Director Frawley. Nice to see you again, and we're excited to hear what you have going on at the zoo this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. John Frawley, Director of the Minnesota Zoo. Mr. Chair, we do have Donnie with us, one of our interpretive naturalists, and if you're willing, you'd like to share a few animals before we start? Or
that'd be great.
Donnie has been part of our offsite programs for over 18 years, I believe. Donnie has been out throughout all over Minnesota, pretty much every city and county, and I'll let Donnie take it from here.
Excellent. One of my jobs is to go to schools and libraries and other places like that. And one of the animals we get to bring is our little chinchilla here. These guys, they come from South America, and they're one of the softest animals in the world. They have 60 hairs coming out of each little hole in their skin, where we have one or two. Having 60 hairs coming out of each little hole and having one of the softest furs in the world, it is a challenge for these guys. At one point, back in the day, there was only 17 of these animals left out in the wild. And with help from zoos, with help from Minnesota Zoo, we've been sending money, we've been sending staff, we've been sending lots of different things. Now these guys are being seen in spots around the world that they've never been seen before. We're not going to pet, but you guys can all take a look. Now these guys, they are members of the rodent family, so they are just a big, cute, furry mouse or a bunny. They have giant feet like a bunny, and they eat stuff that a bunny would eat also. They eat fruits, they eat vegetables, they eat lots and lots of different things like that. They live really high up in the Andes Mountains where it's nice and cold, so that's why they have to have this nice warm fur. Kind of a fun little guy, kind of a fuzzy little guy.
Is he smelling right now? Is that what he's doing?
He's actually twitching those little whiskers to be able to make sure that he's not going to run into anything. Living in little caves, they have to make sure that they can fit their fuzzy bones back through the way so that they are able to make sure that they can go in. So they're just kind of feeling away around with those whiskers. And I have one more guy, and this is actually a Minnesota one coming up next. If you give me 1 second, now, a lot of people love the fuzzy stuff, but my favorite is
snake. There we go.
There are these guys.
Oh, wow. That
might be. And non-mammals don't need this. Now, this guy is a bull snake. This is an animal we can find right here in Minnesota, and this is an animal that myself actually went out into the field to help with conservation. These guys, their numbers are going down because they live in grasslands, they live in farmers' fields, they live in places where they're going to find mice and rats, and these guys, their numbers are going down. So a few years ago, I went out with the DNR to help them find out where these guys are sleeping, find out where they are hibernating all winter long, and we actually found 6 of these animals. And being yellow and big and giant, these guys, I was walking through a farmer's field one day, and I looked right down. It was one like probably 3 feet, or probably 2 feet from my feet. And I'm like, wow. So this yellow and black really does help to camouflage. They're not venomous. They are a constrictor or a squeezer. They grab their food right in their mouth, wrap their body very tightly around it, and squeeze. Out in the wild, these guys eat mice, they eat rats, they eat birds, they eat eggs. They can even eat a rabbit or a squirrel. And if they eat something that big, they can go a whole year without eating. I miss breakfast and my belly starts to rumble. Now, I'm going to walk behind you guys. If you guys would like a chance, you guys can all have a chance to talk to him.
Or not. I believe Representative Herr is very interesting.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. They're not slimy. They are actually very clean, very dry animals. Your eyes and your brain play tricks on you. They say that this animal is so shiny, it must be slimy, but they're not. There you go.
We're not supposed to talk, are we?
Yeah. Yeah. Get permission. I might want to take a bet.
I'll go back that way.
No, I'm good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Representative Hart.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Snakes are actually amazing animals. They don't have any eyelids. They don't have any ears. And this one keeps sticking out his tongue, not to be rude, but to smell. We smell with our noses. These guys, they smell with their nose and that big, long tongue of theirs. And kids would always be amazed that we could have that snakes and animals that are this big living right in our own backyard. So being part of the zoo was always cool to show off the big, huge animals that come from rainforests and things like that. But one of my favorite parts was showing kids who don't usually get out in nature anymore the animals they have in their own backyard, the owls, the snakes, the bunnies, the other animals like that. So thank you guys for letting me bring my animals to see you guys, and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Donnie. Director Crowley, sorry.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you. I think probably that pretty much says it all. I mean, one of the programs that's supported by Legacy for the Minnesota Zoo is taking animals out throughout Minnesota, reaching people that don't have a chance to see and meet these animals. I was just speaking earlier to some friends. I've seen people that are 97 years old touch and hold a snake for the first time in their life, you know, through these Zoomobile outreach programs. So pretty special, and thank you, Donnie. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'd like to take a few minutes and just kind of go over some of the great support we've had from Legacy over the last 10 years and a little bit that outlines our request to you today. First, I'll outline three areas that we use Legacy funds at the Minnesota Zoo. First, we use them to create unique human and animal connections, like you just saw. We use them to provide access and statewide outreach, as well as educational programming. And we use Legacy funds to expand the ways we serve Minnesota through the lens of DEIA in our exhibits and a lot of our events. Here are a few examples. As a lot of you may know, the Minnesota Zoo is home to the Wells Fargo Family Farm. The photo on the left shows a small child experiencing our farm. Minnesota has a rich farming history. Legacy funds allow us to open this farm early in the season and keep it later in the season to reach more audiences that have timing issues coming to the farm. So that's important use of Legacy funds. The student on the right has experienced a program just like you experienced a few moments ago. This Legacy support allows us to travel throughout Minnesota to hospitals and nursing homes and classrooms, reaching Minnesotans that physically can't get to the Minnesota Zoo. So that's all under animal connections. As it relates to access, outreach, education, the photo on the left shows you some of the fun support that we have that allows us to create zoo maps. Everybody has come to the zoo and you receive a map of the zoo. Well, these funds allow us to provide those maps in 11 different languages. We also on the right show a photo of an app that's created and updated with the help of Legacy funds that is for people and families with special needs. It's designed for autistic children and families that really makes their visit worthwhile to the zoo. Also, I would say the Legacy funds has helped us to create a DEI change group at the zoo, which aligns with the One Minnesota Council and brings DEIA lenses to all the work that we do at the Minnesota Zoo. The third area that we'd like to go share with you is new exhibits, events, and arts. Legacy Funds helps with this. A couple examples, real big educational exhibits that have been supported by Legacy Funds. We're creating an exhibit for bringing dino experiences to the Minnesota Zoo and teaching people and kids about the history of dinosaurs. And we've recently brought llama trek from animals from South America to teach kids and people about the important animals that live in that region of the world. Both these types of examples of exhibits are free with admission when you come into the zoo, to all. To give some examples on new exhibits and events, or to give examples, I should say, on events, hopefully a lot of you maybe have heard or have been able to join us for our Jack-O-Lantern Spectacular, which is an artistic display of over 5,000 jack-o'-lanterns at the zoo. Interesting about this event is it attracted more than 133,000 people in just a little over 4 weeks. 75% of those people that came were not zoo members. They're just Minnesotans that appreciated the art and having a place for their families to go during the month of October. We are also in our second year of Wild Nights, which is also supported by Legacy. This is an event created every Thursday night through the lens of DEIA, where we have musicians and art vendors and food vendors from Minnesota come out and celebrate conservation themes at the Minnesota Zoo. So all these types of events have been and are supported by our legacy request. This last slide I'm not going to read to you, but the second paragraph there is a quote from a musician that we worked with on our Summer Nights program, Annie Mack, and I thought it was just very meaningful how this type of programming has changed her thoughts about the Minnesota Zoo and how it serves all Minnesotans. So I thought it was important to share that with you. And this is in your packets, so I'll let you read that on your own time. And Mr. Chair and committee members, the request itself, as you can see, we did a historical appropriations. This year our request is $4 million for the biennium, a little over approximately 2.5% increase to reflect some of the costs and inflation that's happening around the world and around Minnesota and at the zoo. So with that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I would be open for any questions.
Thank you, Director. Any questions? Representative Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In regards with, thank you. In regards with how many visitors, since the COVID thing has kind of what, how have you been, how has the Zoom, in handling the visitors and increasing the numbers back and so forth after COVID? What have you guys been doing?
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for that question. The zoo was hit quite hard, like many organizations in Minnesota. The zoo receives one-third of its funding from the state, and two-thirds we have to be like a Main Street or a small business. So we were dramatically affected, but the good news is we're a large outdoor attraction, almost 500 acres. So as the pandemic started to pull back, the zoo started to recover quite fast and has come back quite strong. Our membership is close to 40,000 household members. It had dropped in the pandemic to close to 20,000. Our yearly attendance is growing now over 1 million, which historically it's close to 1.4 million. So we're starting to see a lot of recovery. People really love the zoo. Most of the programming that I outlined is sold out, and people, all of our camps are being sold out. But we're still in big recovery mode. We're having a little bit of challenges with our workforce, trying to rebuild workforces, especially the trades. And our events and special programming has not returned. Those types of events have to be booked 2-3 years out. And so we've lost a lot of that long-term booking and support for events. So we still we're still looking at ourselves as in recovery from the pandemic, but we're at a strong recovery pace, and I think we're feeling good about how Minnesotans are using the zoo. So hopefully that answers your question.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, that does. Generally, I don't know if you can answer this, but the $4 million, well, past $3.9 million, mm-hmm. is that earmarked to a certain, is it care for animals or is it use? Could you elaborate on that? Where the legacy dollars go into the zoo?
Director Frawley.
Mr. Chair, committee members, it's really a spread throughout the entire zoo and some of the programming that I talked about. So it is spread out to areas on site like our farms, more reach to Minnesotans, like you saw from Donnie today. But it gets into some things like producing maps, helping us produce apps for, you know, special needs families. So I think that, you know, it's not just supporting one program, it's spread throughout. The other thing I think it allows us to do is continue to be modernize our all of our events and programming to reach more Minnesotans. And that's one of the things I tried to convey in the presentation today is we've redesigned a lot of programming that wasn't really serving all of Minnesotans to now really serve all communities and be welcoming to all communities. So it's not one specific area. That $4 million is spread throughout a lot of programming, allowing that programming to have better reach and be better through the lens of equity and inclusion and diversity and access. And so it's kind of elevating everything that we do through that lens is how I would answer that question.
Representative Backer.
No more. No follow. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Schott.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Barron, for bringing this bill forward. As a refugee and immigrant community, being here in Minnesota, the zoos played a big part in our community. You know, we are indigenous people of Southeast Asia, and, you know, we have a lot of interaction with nature. And so coming to America and having access to the zoo was a great thing and very therapeutic for my parents and the elders. Mm-hmm. And my favorite center is going to have to be the Raptor Center. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Goff. I have a quick question. So given that we have Chair Lee here from the Capital Investment Chair, and I'm just, you know, so you're doing a lot of projects. So how are those projects coming as far as, and then the interaction with legacy funds? So as your Skywalk nearing completion and some of the other projects, and then will the legacy enhance that by displays, like you're saying, or information? Director Frawley.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for that question. Yes, the Minnesota Zoo, a lot of people refer to us as the new zoo. I still hear that today, but we are going on 45 years old. So there are a lot of physical needs, and thank you for the bonding committees of current and past to help us rebuild and make sure the zoo's ready to serve another 45 years. Mr. Chair, the treetop trail is one project that I think you referenced. It's a project where we're converting our old monorail track, which is obsolete and closed, into the world's longest treetop walk, and we're excited to say that project is funded and under construction and scheduled to be open this July. So Minnesotans are going to have a beautiful walk in nature through the trees, 40 feet up, 1.25 miles, and it will be the longest treetop walk, nature walk in the world. So we're excited about that, and we thank the state for their support as well as a lot of private donations that we've received. This year, we're working with the bonding committees and the governor's office on a request to two main projects. One is a new veterinarian hospital for the Minnesota Zoo to serve the animals that called the Minnesota Zoo home. Our hospital is over 47 years old. And second, we have large infrastructure projects around the zoo, the main walkway around the zoo, which is Lakeside Plaza. Like you hear with bridge projects around Minnesota, we have a cantilevered walkway that's collapsing into the lake. So both those projects are getting a lot of attention, and we're able to present those to the bonding committees and getting a lot of good feedback from them so far in the session. So we're hopeful that we can continue to fix up our 45-year-old campus, and we're real proud that we're focusing on projects to keep the zoo new and accessible.
Thank you. Vice Chair Hussein.
Thank you for being here, and just have a simple question for you. My question is, are you partnership public schools or like families that cannot afford to get into the zoo, would you give in any kind of sort of discount, or just are you willing to work with people that cannot afford to, you know, bring their kids and have a good time with their zoo?
Director Frawley.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for that question. I'm proud to say that 7 years ago when I arrived at the zoo as the new director, we took a close look at access. And one of the things that we wanted to be is we wanted to be a free zoo to those people who need us to be free. So what we did is we aligned with the current state standards of access, so all the different types of programs the state, when you qualify for general assistance at the state of Minnesota, you now have free access to the Minnesota Zoo. So we're proud to say once we implemented that program, we call it Free to Explore the Minnesota Zoo. So if you do qualify for general assistance, the zoo's free. The year before COVID, even now, I think we're back up to the same numbers. We're serving over 100,000 people at the Minnesota Zoo for free every year. We've also started to work with large corporations around Minnesota to go after two times poverty, you know, through sponsored days, corporate sponsored days, like Dakota Electric Days is a good example. If you have a Dakota Electric bill on a certain day of the year, you can just show the bill and come to the zoo for free. So we have the Free to Explore program serving over 100,000 Minnesotans, and we're building more and more days for, you know, trying to address the two times poverty, those families that don't qualify for general assistance but are still on tight, tight budgets. So I think the zoo is doing a good job, and we're not done. We'll continue to promote those programs.
Vice Chair Hussein.
No, thank you very much. Continue the great work you do.
Thank you. Related to that, I have a question. What would maybe you could provide to staff what a free day would cost? If that were to be purchased by the Legacy Committee.
A free day at the Minnesota Zoo?
You can provide it to, you know, for
everyone. I have my chief operating officer next to me. I think a day at the Minnesota Zoo, like a Dakota Electric Day for them to do this, it's around a $20,000 to $30,000 funding to allow them to provide the zoo for free for a day. I think that's it?
I think we'd have to follow up
with that. I think it's probably...
I'm comfortable with you just providing that to our staff. And
yeah, I think, you know, what we'll do is we'll outline how we underwrite our free days and access days. But the real free days is the Free to Explore, Mr. Chairman, and that is if you qualify for general assistance, you can come to the zoo any day that we're open for free. That's the program that reaches over 100,000 students, or 100,000 Minnesotans, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Director Frawley, yep. And certainly thank you to Donnie and bringing some treasures.
Yep.
We were kind of hoping you might bring like one of the wolves. That was great. Thank you. Seeing no other further more questions. Representative Irvin, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for digging in on this and just having the opportunity to share the success of the Minnesota Zoo, and the current leadership of Director Frawley has been amazing. And come out to the zoo. You will feel better. We emphasize the health of this, as Representative Cha spoke, and you will feel better with a visit to the zoo. So hope to see you soon. Yes, but thank you very much. I'm proud to be there. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Bierman, Director Frawley. Thank you for, again, Donnie, for bringing the guests and others.
All right, Mr. Chair, committee members, Bierman, thank you. Appreciate it.
With that, the bill is laid over. On to the Science Museum. So, as you're coming up, I'll move that... House File 1247 be a laid over for possible inclusion. And, I don't think we have any snakes. So
no.
You're going to be okay.
Yeah, we're going to do that.
I'm going to let you see Rose.
Okay.
Welcome, Representative Perez Vega. Welcome to the Legacy Committee, and please tell us what you're working on today.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Everyone knows that my name is Representative Maria Isa Perez Vega, but I'll set the reminder again. I'm here to support HF 1247, the Science Museum of Minnesota's fiscal year 24 through 25 legacy request funding their statewide science education and equity initiative. I'm joined by Allison Brown, President and CEO of the Science Museum of Minnesota, and John Severson, Director of Strategic Partnerships and Government Relations. I'm pleased to be here because the Science Museum is of such great importance to not only my district of 65B, but to all Minnesota. The museum is nationally recognized for excellence in its educational programming, exhibit development and production, and leading role in tackling the challenging topics of race and equity through its award-winning exhibit, Race, Are We So Different?, which toured to nearly 60 cities and has been seen in over 4 million visitors. The Science Museum experience is unique amongst our Minnesota cultural institutions, one that emphasizes hands-on learning and helps all Minnesotans see themselves in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math careers. And as a performing artist who has deeply rooted in the Science Museum, I like to add the A into the STEAM because they've been advocates for arts and science as well. We need the Science Museum now, more than ever. I grew up as the Skyway kid going to the old building right here in St. Paul and being excited to climb. I sure many of you throughout the state remember and still can visit that dragon that is now located in the new facility that I remember being at the groundbreaking and the ribbon cutting as a West Side St. Paul kid, knowing that we had programs available to us, to all of our kids, me being one of them, to be introduced into video and production and recording art technology through the Science Museum. And it's beautiful to see now that my daughter is very active and wanting to go every other weekend to visit the dinosaurs. It's her favorite thing to do. Science Museum leverages legacy dollars to raise additional funding to serve students and educators throughout Minnesota. As you will hear shortly, the museum also uses legacy funds to connect with Minnesota's traditionally underrepresented communities in museum visitation and STEM careers. In addition, the museum hosts listening sessions and forms advisory groups to help shape Science Museum programs that welcome and serve all Minnesotans now and into the future. And lastly, legacy funds help support the preservation, interpretation, and digitization of over 2 million objects in the museum's research collections. I think that's pretty cool. And while the museum builds on past legacy-funded successes, it continues to innovate and find ways to serve all of us best. I strongly encourage members to support for the Science Museum's full request. With that, I would welcome Allison and John to share more about the Science Museum's plans. Science is beautiful.
President Brown.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Allison Rempel Brown, President and CEO of the Science Museum of Minnesota, and thank you, Representative Perez Vega. We are truly grateful for your support and leadership in District 65B. As Representative Perez Vega mentioned, education and science centering equity are at the core of the Science Museum's mission to turn on the science, inspire learning, inform policy, and improve lives. Legacy support is foundational to the museum's ability to develop an innovative STEM curriculum and serve Minnesota students through our outreach programs, hands-on field trips, and professional development programs for educators and administrators across the state. As the slideshow will show, we reached 70 of 87 counties in 2022 with Science Museum programs. Before the pandemic, we were proud to share that we reached all 87 counties within the museum programming for seven straight years. As we build back from the pandemic's lasting social and economic impacts, we will continue to work toward reaching all 87 counties to provide meaningful educational experiences to impact learners of all ages across our great state. We proudly represent Minnesota, serving as a leader nationally in informal science education and across the broader museum field. We understand the importance of STEM learning and workforce readiness. STEM careers are growing three times faster than all other careers combined in the next 10 years. We already have a shortage of STEM talent. One only needs to look at the challenges our hospitals and healthcare systems, agriculture, all sorts of fields are missing in the STEM careers. And this is only one of two sectors that we can mention where STEM careers are so important. And we're working to help address this issue by inspiring young minds and helping them see themselves in these STEM careers. We have our Kitty Anderson Youth Science Center, which is a youth leadership rooted in STEM justice. It's building STEM identity in high school participants and providing young adult interns with workforce-ready credentials and paid internships to help them see themselves in STEM careers. We are very grateful for generous support from the Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Science, its inception, legacy funding scene has powered our statewide school initiatives, and since the legacy's inception, we've served almost 1.6 million Minnesotan students and 128,000 educators, providing engaging programming and teacher training in all 87 counties. the dissemination of the small footprint versions of our award-winning Race Are We So Different exhibit, which our representative commented on, to communities across greater Minnesota, along with programming to support help sites facilitate conversations in those communities. The digital conversion of our very popular William L. McKnight 3M Omni Theater. You're welcome to join us at OmniFest, which is going through April 9th. Also, legacy funding allows us to share the rich history and ongoing narratives of our Dakota and Ojibwe peoples by interpreting American Indian collections in our Move and We Stay exhibit, both on the museum floor and through the digitization of collections at the museum. These are just a few of the many ways legacy funding positively impacted our work across the state. Today, we request your consideration for $1,740,000 over the coming biennium. This is a 24% increase to our current appropriation of $1.4 million. This funding will continue to support the outstanding results achieved with our statewide science, education, and equity initiatives, while building on our work to deepen our impact on Minnesota families and communities and provide greater online access to Minnesota-based collections. We will discuss these projects in greater detail in a moment. The timing of these funds is also crucial as we work to emerge from the long-lasting economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic and address the challenge of significant inflation on employee wages, benefits, travel, and general museum operations. Impact Experience, a leading national market analytics firm that tracks attendance trends nationwide, recently released a study showing science centers and children's museums are recovering more slowly than other cultural institutions. There are many reasons for this lag, and I'm happy to answer questions in the Q&A. But for brevity, please know the museum is doing everything in its power to address these challenges and build back better. State sources represent less than 10% of our $32 million budget, with legacy funding representing roughly 2%. Of the remaining funds, 3% comes from the general operation appropriation, and 5% comes from the Competitive Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund grants that power our scientific research. Though not a majority revenue stream, the 2% represented by legacy is essential. We count on those dollars to develop new educational offerings which serve students across the state with fun, interactive, and stimulating informal STEM education. Last year, as schools reopened to travel and in-school assemblies, over 91,000 participants in 70 counties experienced a school field trip, outreach program, or teacher professional development, and we look forward to growing that number back to our historic levels. I'm now asked John Severson to share the details of our request quickly.
Thank you, President Brown. Director Severson.
Thank you, Chair. Members, my name is John Severson, and I have the honor of serving as the Director of Strategic Partnerships and Government Relations at the Science Museum, as President Brown shared. Our current request builds on the strengths and programs previously supported by this committee and helps address audiences better access science museum resources. These fall into three major categories: continuing to understand and respond to the STEM learning needs of communities and schools, developing educational programs that equitably meet the needs of Minnesota families, and amplifying the connection of science and culture through the museum's research, collections, and collaborations. With a full funding request, the museum will seek to build on current successes and add new elements to this work. First, the Science Museum will continue to serve Minnesotans through its statewide school outreach programs, providing research-based, standards-aligned STEM programming to students, teachers, and school districts. As we have shared, legacy funds are a unique funding source for the museum that allow us to develop curriculum and STEM programming that would not otherwise be accessible or available to school audiences. An example I would like to highlight, I know it's not a chinchilla, but an example of this is funded by legacy dollars, are our Automata project. These kit-based engineering activities are centered around cultural stories and distributed free to fourth and fifth grade classrooms who have a significant population of the cultures represented. To date, we have featured Hmong, Mayan, and Ojibwe stories in the kits, and they have been very popular. Yeah, so they're very simple, but introduce STEM, and I'm happy to pass this around. Here's one of them. We have three of them. And it's they're very simple, but this one's seen some better days. It's been a sample. But it's a story of the sun and the moon that the kids are able to assemble. With these kits, and I'm sorry, here's an example of the kits that are shared. With these kits, BIPOC students who have historically experienced exclusion from STEM narratives see their culture's representative in a multilingual STEM-focused classroom. Second, the Science Museum will work collaboratively with communities to understand their goals and align museum resources and programming to those needs. Another highlight, oh, we went all the way to the end. There we go. Another highlight, and this is currently in a pilot phase, is a community curator program, which would highlight the voices and experiences of Indigenous and new Minnesotans whose cultures are represented in our collections, but whose perspectives have been traditionally underrepresented. This program will help marginalized communities see the museum as a place that values their stories. And what did I do? Third, the museum will work to amplify the connections of science and culture through the museum's research, collections, and collaborations. We will continue work on digitizing our collections to make them available to classrooms, researchers, and the public. And in a true intersection of arts and science, the museum is hoping to expand equitable access to artists and writers who participate in the Pine Needles Residency Program. This is a longstanding program which takes place at our St. Croix Watershed Research Station near Marine on St. Croix. Providing stipends will broaden the availability and perspectives to the artists who enhance our understanding of environmental sciences through their work. And these are just a few examples of the work which is ongoing and that legacy dollars help to support. And with that, I will pass it back to Allison for closure.
Thank you, John. And
President Brown.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for your past support and consideration of the full request for the Science Museum's priority projects in fiscal year 24 and fiscal year 25. A legacy appropriation will help ensure we continue serving students and families across Minnesota with excellent and culturally relevant informal science education initiatives. And we are available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Representative Finke.
I didn't realize. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenters and Representative Perez Vega. I want to start by saying that I am hugely fond of the Science Museum. I've brought my kids there many times. I've seen many films there. I've had a surprisingly high number of my friends that that work in exhibit design and fabrication have been through. Actors, a very dear friend of mine was an actor at the Science Museum for a number of years. So I love the work you're doing and the program that you're doing. But I'm fairly concerned about the Science Museum's behavior in response to the union movement, up to and including the layoffs that took place yesterday around the members who have been organizing for union work. It's very concerning to me. So I would just love to have a moment to hear from leadership, because I don't usually get to sit in front of the leadership the day after union organizers are laid off from their jobs. So I would just love to hear at least something about how this is going to continue and what it's going to look like.
President Brown.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the questions. Thank you, committee members, and happy to talk about that. And, well, not happy to talk about it. Making any decision about employees and their work that they're doing is always a challenge. And as we talked about in the comments, we're recovering more slowly than other institutions from the pandemic. And children's museums and science museums across the nation are having a slower recovery. And we are projecting that this fiscal year, which ends on June 30th, and next fiscal year, that our revenues will be about 25% from what they were pre-pandemic. And for us, pre-pandemic is fiscal year 19, just before the pandemic. And so we have had to reduce our expenses to match the revenues that we are projecting for the end of this fiscal year and for next fiscal year. And unfortunately, our 60% of our expenses are people expenses. And that unfortunately then meant that it affected how many people we can have on staff. And so there was a staff reduction that we thought through very carefully through a number of different filters. And one of them was around our level of work that is happening at the museum. Our attendance is lower. Some of our work in exhibits is less. and then also how we do our work differently to achieve some efficiencies we had to do as well. How do we do some of our work differently were some of the ways that we looked at it. And it ended up affecting 30 positions. 15 of those positions are vacant and are positions that we will not fill. And then very hard decisions to make. 15 of those positions, or 16 of those positions, were positions that had wonderful employees in them doing great work. And some of those positions, some of those employees were people who were part of the organizing group, and some of them were not. So it was not targeted at all for people who were part of the organizing group. And some of the people who stayed were part of the organizing group for the union. So the union was elected in January, and we have committed to work with, so AFSCME is the union that is representing our employees. We let AFSCME know about what was happening. We communicated with them last week ahead of when the reductions took place. We let the staff know ahead of time. So we are committed to working closely with the union and moving forward and having good negotiations with them when the negotiations start. So even though we don't have a contract, we do want to work well with the unions. We let them know ahead of time about that the reductions would be happening, and then we let them know the specific individuals yesterday as well. So it did include people who were part of the organizing group, but also included employees who were not part of the organizing group. Every one of those employees was a great employee, doing great work. Unfortunately, we have to make financial changes to be sustainable going forward, and that includes this year and next year as we then start trying to build back our revenues and working hard to do that. The employees who were let go are on a callback list and will be called back as if our revenues grow, they can come back into those positions. And we hope that happens. And we let the union know that as well.
Thank you, President Brown. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. And I appreciate your response and your candor. And I know that that's not what we came here to talk about. But I'm going to support this bill. I mean, I'm not trying to say we shouldn't be funding these programs, but we shouldn't separate programs from corporate culture. And it's important to me that when we see people unionizing and votes being taken, and we need to be very clear about what happens after that happens. Some of the people that I've talked to at AFSCME have said that it was one of the most difficult, highest levels of opposition they've ever seen in an organizing movement. So I want that on the record as we fund these wonderful programs.
Thank you, Representative Finke. As Chair, I actually appreciate your question. Quick question. Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. And my question, if I heard this correctly, you guys, the Science Museum is looking for a 24% increase from their legacy. My assumption, just from putting point A, point B, is this because of reduction of revenue. And I'm wondering, is that reduction of revenue, is it solely based on lower attendance, or was there lower fees? If you could provide a little additional background on that, because obviously we saw the zoo, they were around 7, 8%, so 24% gets a person's attention. So if you could help share that, that would be appreciated.
President Brown, go ahead.
Chair, committee members, and thank you for the question. Yes, happy to go into that. The largest reduction for us is in admissions revenue driven by attendance. And again, that comes to that children's museums and science centers are coming back more slowly. There's not a clear reason, there's not one reason why they're recovering more slowly. Probably one of the reasons is that children were the last to be vaccinated, and so parents kept their kids at home. Children's museums and science centers are considered indoor spaces, whereas the zoo is an outdoor space. So there's also a study done by an organization called PGAV that shows that places that are outdoors actually some of them have exceeded their attendance from 2019. Many of us came to explore and love outdoor spaces during the pandemic, and that those were the places that recovered more quickly, and some of them above their attendance levels in 2019. National parks are actually at peak attendance right now. Some of them are actually being overrun. So being indoor space also created a challenge. And we're trying to remind people that our museum is a very safe space. This is not an ad, but our ceilings are 17 feet tall. So it's a huge space, and you can move around and move away from people and have a very safe experience. So the biggest challenge is the admissions revenue. Our contributions are also down. So contributive revenue is down, and that's industry-wide. That's for lots of nonprofits that's happening. There's been a change in how contributions can be deducted from your taxes, and there's actually some action at the federal level to try to change how that is, to make a change in people being able to deduct their individual contributions. But our contributions are down about 20% from 2019, so that's another challenge for us as well.
Representative Becker.
And I appreciate that. I mean, those are challenges you have to work with. You have to make tough decisions. I would really invite in the future, as you guys are being the lead on the Republican side, that we, you know, my office would be open for us to meet. I have a lot of the people who present their bills beforehand meet with myself too. So, because obviously we have questions on this side of the aisle, and we're pretty much not. You know, we don't get into fist fights. You know, I think he would win, by the way, but no, the chair would. But on a serious note, this is a pretty civil committee, quite civil, thank you, Chair. And I would really invite to meet more with the zoo and learn more, because at the end it is, I think I said zoo, I meant to say the Science Museum, because it is a great resource for our state. So, and I'm a chemist, that's what I graduated from college, so I do love science as much as our author does, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Becker. I'm more of a runner at my age.
I'll chase you then, okay? I'll chase
Walk
you.
Walk away faster. Mm-hmm. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, President Brown and Representative Perez Vega for bringing this forward. And so I just want to kind of continue with the line of questions from Representative Fanke. And so understanding that you're asking for an appropriations here and then also in the Environment Committee asking for an appropriations above base over there. And so if we're going to have more programming, is that going to, and we have a reduction in staff, who's going to carry on the work? And, you know, I sit on environment too, and so if we're going to fund over there too, what is that appropriation over there going to be paying for us to get a clear picture of what's going on?
President Brown.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. Thank you for the question. And the work is what's been outlined within that John reviewed in his presentation, those three areas. And it's an excellent question about, and we've been thinking about this as we went through our reductions, is it, because one of the problems that can happen at probably not just museums but other places is to reduce staff but not reduce the workload that is done. So then you have fewer staff doing the same amount of workload. So we've been careful in how we've thought about that and our work. And so the funding is really those three areas that John went through, the three topics. I don't have them right in front of me here, but working in that work. And it's building off of what we're already doing, areas where we know we're successful. So the pine needles work, but trying to make change that so that it is more inclusive and bring in artists that are more diverse and bring in a different perspective into their work. So it's a program that has an endowment that funds part of the work, but it doesn't fund completely the work that is done there. And it's a beautiful space out in Marina and St. Croix that the artists then are resident in, and how do we work, and we'll probably work with community, because we always do partnerships, partner with other organizations to figure out how we do some of that, expand that work, and that funding would help with that work, with that expansion.
Chair Lee.
Last follow-up, Mr. Chair. So just to be clear then, President Brown, you're saying that if the appropriation is passed, you're going to have the capacity with the reduction in staff to carry out what you're asking for in the proposal.
Yes.
President Brown.
Oops, sorry. Mr. Chair, committee members, yes, and we've been very thoughtful about that.
Is that our, President Brown, is that our experience on the Marine? Is that at Franconia, or is that somewhere else?
Mr. Chair, no, that's a good question. It's actually, we have property out at Marina St. Croix. Much of it had been donated from various families over the years. We have about 300 acres, and most of that, those acres has a conservation easement on it. This little section does not have a conservation easement on it, and it's a cabin. It's a summer cabin. It's not winterized. And then that is a space where the artists actually stay. And they use that to they create whatever art they want. We don't want to get in the way of art and artist inspiration. But frequently it's then inspired by the science that is happening at the Science Museum, inspired by the beautiful landscape that's up there. And that's where it actually happens, right there at Marina St. Croix. But they also travel around the state.
Well, thank you very much. I have a special fondness for your place as well. My son is a chemist by profession, and his first membership they ever bought on his own was a membership to, you know, to be a member at your place. So I thought that was pretty neat to spend his own money and do something like that. And I'm looking forward to seeing Representative Perez Vega doing something with your steps, with your musical steps. I think she could do a pretty neat video, I imagine. Any final comments, Representative? And thank you for coming today. Thank you for everyone that came and answering our questions. And I would hope that that they're available for questions for members if they were to have continued questions. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and fellow members of the committee. I'm just really proud of the work that's been able to sustain throughout the years, specifically with cultural districts, specifically with our communities, our BIPOC communities, most importantly, our children in the state of Minnesota. This has been my backyard. This has been a field of work for not just myself, but generations of students and the youth that I've worked with who are on to go get jobs and opportunities to volunteer on hands-on skills with representation that looks like them, with scientists and other volunteers connecting what's rooted when we talk about race, what's rooted when we talk about the environmental justices, what's rooted when we talk about clean energy and how that works in our schools. There's cause and effect. And the cause with the Science Museum is that it's been really great effectiveness in bridging our kids. I have so many students that are learning how to research a bill now. Now that they see that Miss Issa is a state rep, and one of their favorites is to see that the Science Museum is fighting for the funding that gave them opportunities to travel throughout the state, that gave them summer jobs, that gave them summer programming, that offered scholarships to those programs that maybe they would have not ever had a chance to go on to now the new fields of work in higher education. When you see kids in our school programming go from after school and wanting to learn more, and they speak two languages that they're learning both at the same time, want to advance in science, it's a beauty and it's a caption and it's also a description of the hard work and dedication that the Science Museum has been doing. I'm really proud to carry this. I'm a Science Museum kid, just like those kids that acted in Stranger Things and made us international here in District 65B. And I look forward from the support of this committee. And I also want to talk just on behalf of Representative Finke's comments and as a strong supporter of the unions, that I know that the conversations, especially with those union workers in my district, are about collective communication and how we can make this right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you for the presentation today. With that, House File 1247 is laid over. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So as they're coming forward, I'll move that House File 210 be laid over for possible inclusion. Is it 2120? Sorry, I read it wrong. I'm 2120. So welcome, Representative Jordan, back to your committee. And you're missed. And go ahead when you're ready, please.
thank you, Chair. I think the thing that's great about this committee is this really is everyone's committee, because this is the committee that gives back to the people of Minnesota. So good morning, and today we're here to talk about House File 2120, which would grant $250,000 from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund to Appetite for Change for the Community Cooks Program. The Community Cooks Program delivers meal boxes to families to learn to cook traditional meals with fresh local ingredients. Appetite for Change is based just across the river from my district in North Minneapolis. And with their Community Cooks Program, Appetite for Change collaborates with community organizations to directly serve families experiencing food insecurity and a lack of access to fresh and nutritious food. These meal boxes include instructions for family-friendly and wholesome meals grounded in traditional foodways. Food is an essential component of our cultural heritage. Learning to prepare food unique to our history and families connects us to our ancestors and enables us to share who we are as friends, families, and neighbors. An idea that a food that I've seen in my culture that I've seen in the news lately is, I think a lot of us saw the Archdiocese says that we get to eat corned beef on Friday, even though it's Lent. And that's acknowledging that, you know, corned beef is an essential part of Irish culture and our heritage, and if the church says it's okay, it's okay. But that's just showing how important culture and food are to who we are as people and why what Appetite for Change is doing is such an important part of our arts and cultural heritage. They also partner and partner with the Good Acre and celebrate our agricultural traditions. I think it's always important to talk about agriculture, and especially in my community, we need to talk about agriculture and think about where food comes from more than just at the state fair once a year. I think, Mr. Chair, it's better to just let Appetite for Change talk about the great work they do, but they really do incredible work. I'm really grateful that this committee was able to fund this program last year. I'm excited to hear some stories about what they've done with that funding and hope that it can continue into the future.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Welcome, Ms. Powell, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Good morning, everyone. I think it's still morning.
Yes.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Chairman. My name is Nicole. I work for Appetite for Change. Our mission there is to use food as a tool to build health, wealth, and social change in our community. I am the program manager there. I don't have anything to show like the other two that were up here, but I am a product of the work that they have done there, starting off as a community member, volunteering my time there, and to learn about food. Growing up, I never thought about where my food come from and the importance of it, long as I was eating it. But there I was educated on what I was doing with the food that I was buying, where it really come from, and how simple it is to make it myself at home. So by going to the programming, I learned how to cook food, learning to rethink what I eat, learning to rethink what my kids drink. The program became essential to my family, where I continue to be more involved in it. And with the help of Appetite for Change, it was nothing where it was pushed on to me. I gradually changed my eating habits, learning to take our favorite food and cook it at home from scratch, which is the flagship program. Appetite for Change is bringing the community members together and cooking our favorite dishes from scratch, not out the box. In a friendly environmental space where we all could come together and speak about food insecurities, what packs us in our community, and uplifting our recipes and bringing families back to the table. Community Cooks was postponed due to COVID, and we had to swift it to a Community Cooks mailbox program, which brought our families back to the table, because we wasn't able to have them in the space. And this program that we had did with them had helped the families reconnect with their families at home, bring back those home conversations, and learning the essentials to cooking with your family and just sharing conversations. We have also done virtual cooking workshops for our moms. Because during the pandemic, a lot of our moms were dealing with stress and depression, and they just needed a safe space to still communicate with other moms and just have a welcoming space just to be themselves. We work with them bi-weekly virtually, and we built that relationship and sustained it through the pandemic. We have yet started our Community Cooks back in person. We're planning to start it this year. We're looking forward to it, so as the participants. I keep saying, I apologize. It's my first time here. It's my first time here. I'm trying to make sure that I'm telling you everything about what we do and how we'll use the funding to sustain our programming. We had had the funding in 21 to do something different. We was already shifted to the mailbox and the video recording live cooking workshops. And so we had to find something else to do. And so we decided to gather elder community members, young folks from the community that was had great impact to our community, you know, getting to know them and understand their stories while around food. We know a lot of people in our community, but we don't know them. And people that are from the community are kind of like not really recognized. Like we know their work and what they do, but we don't know who they are. And we had the opportunity to sit down with them and have a conversation over food, know what it is that they do, the work they do that impact our community, favorite foods that they eat, because, you know, food is the starting tool to a great conversation. We find connections, and we find how we can relate to that food. Maybe it's a different sauce, but it's the same thing. And we just sit and we get to know each other. Having that opportunity to do recordings with the community members, we were able to show people who they are. Like, we met with some great people. We knew who they were. We knew they worked, but we never said and heard their voice. And it was a great opportunity to do that, which had sparked the idea to doing a podcast with more community members, because we want to focus in more on a conversation than how we're sitting in the seat. And it's something that we're looking forward to doing. Thank you for listening, Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Polly. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Representative Backer.
Thank you. This is maybe for the chair, for my first question, and then I have a question for the author. But under the legacy umbrella, where would you think this would fall? What are you thinking, Chair?
So, Representative Backer, as a committee through the last cycle, we made a decision to include this, and it fit very tightly, I thought, with the cultural heritage component that we're, or outcomes that we're trying to achieve, and just drawing connections with food and cultures and getting to, you know, connect people, and just, so I thought it fit quite nicely, and I still have of that opinion.
Okay. Yeah, I'm new. I'm the new kid on the block, so that's why I'm asking.
That's a good question.
And my question, and then, Chair, I have one question.
Yes.
And this may be the author, thank you, the author of the testifier, of, which is a great growth in 10 years from 25,000 to 4 million. And I'm not looking for dollar or cents, but just percentage-wise, you know, of that 4 million is X amount of percentage goes to, you know, the food part of it. I mean, just a breakdown of that, how much is that outreach that you've talked about, of that percentage outreach to your community of that $4 million?
Can I?
Ms. Powell.
Yeah. Can I, you know, I don't want to give out the wrong answer, mm-hmm. and just off thought, but is there a way I could follow up with you? That?
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Powell. I think
that would be fair.
Representative Backer.
Yep, that would be fair. Thank you.
Representative
Jha. Thank you, Chair Lady. I like this program. You know, I'm a cultural person. You know, many of our traditional dishes come through our culture and elders. And for many of us who are refugees and immigrants, it's the only memory we have left is at the table when I have that dish that I used to eat with my grandfather. Right? It's a simple dish. It's just ginger with rice and a pepper. But that's what he ate, you know. So when you talk about identifying your culture and keeping it alive through food, I can relate to that. At my home, you know, whenever we get ill or sick, we eat my mom's chicken soup. And there's nothing in the soup except that it's my mom's soup, you know. And then we think about the love that she gave us, the journey she's been on, the challenges that we had. I'm going to give you a little story. Like, some of the refugees in some of these countries, like, we only get to eat, like, meat once a year during New Year's, right? And what we do is that we take this chicken and we make a soup out of it, but nobody gets to eat the chicken. We just eat the soup. And so that we can take the chicken and make another batch of soup tomorrow and just eat the soup, don't touch the chicken. And we do it for as many times as we can until we say, hey, it's time to eat the chicken. Right? And so, and I'll tell you a more recent story is that we happened to be across from the McDonald's right here at the Secretary of State building. As a child growing up here in St. Paul, here in Frogtown, my mom used to take us to McDonald's and buy us a McChicken every Sunday. So every Sunday, even today, I go to that McDonald's to buy that McChicken to think about my mother. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cha. Appreciate your stories. And one of the most amazing cultural experiences I had recently was you took me to a grocery store and we did a quick buy for a caucus we had, and it was great fun, and I appreciate you bringing me, and we had fun buying food, and then we broke it together. So I really value this. Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I, too, am a new kid on the block, and one look at me, you can tell that I appreciate food as much as anyone. So, but, you know, concerned here because we often talk about inclusion in the committee and benefiting all of Minnesota. And when I look at this particular ask, it's just for not even a community, but part of a community. So it seems pretty narrow in scope compared to what we typically ask for. And so just would ask the committee to consider that, as we usually, the question is, how does this benefit all Minnesota? And it seems like a really narrow scope. And also, I guess, would be concerned with just the fact that we're asking for a 66% increase. So that's a big increase. So I guess there's no question in there, but just some thoughts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Farr. I think Representative Jordan might have a comment. I think they are trying to expand. I believe you come to St. Paul as well, and so you're doing, but Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when I served on the Legacy Committee, we appropriated money to projects much narrower than this. I mean, the Litchfield Opera House comes to mind as a project that serves one community very specifically. But we do direct appropriations in this committee for things that are supplemental, not supplanting. And so for this is specifically for the Community Cooks Program, which is the meals that are teaching people about their cultural heritage and how to prepare those meals in ways that are accessible and healthy for families. And so it's really about teaching families about their cultural heritage. It's not like it's a narrow, it's not like we're, it is a community where you can, I've seen their programs and I've seen them teach people how to prepare traditional Mexican food. I'm not Mexican, but it was fun to learn about this black bean sauce. And it's one that I've used. And even though it's not necessarily targeted as my culture, I still gain some cultural knowledge from this program, from the Community Cooks videos and programming. So I think this is an appropriate ask for this committee. I think that adding more money to this was a new program last time. And so I think Appetite for Change has done a good job demonstrating their ability to meet the grants and meet what the Legacy Committee has asked them to do. And the idea of them being able to expand it and being able to serve more people in the community is something that I would hope that this committee could take into consideration when putting together your final omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Strava.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. And may I call you Chef Powell?
If you like.
Okay. I admire you for what you've been through the program. I think it's the cultural heritage part for me. I come from the Iron Range. My family comes from Slovenia in Europe. And we try to keep those heritage foods alive. and we keep cooking them the way our grandmothers did, and we try to put that same love into it. Sometimes it's not as easy, you know, it's and you need help. So if this helps get everyone back into the mode of cooking the way our grandparents did, or makes us feel like we have somewhere to go or where we came from, I support it. And by the way, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scrava. Appreciate your comments. Representative Vang. Chair Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in learning more about the 7 urban farm sites that you have. Being chair of ag, I have interest in anything related to agriculture. So wondering if where those 7 farm sites are located, is it all in North Minneapolis? Mm-hmm. Are those rent or own? And if you guys partner with the city to operate those farm sites?
Ms. Powell or Representative Jordan?
So they are located in North Minneapolis. They are they're rented lots, and some I believe are partnered with the city. We just recently put together a greenhouse, and
the farmers market too.
The farmers market. I forget what the other one is called. I call them a greenhouse, but it's something else that we built overall for 30th in Emerson by Freedom Works. And these farms are open with volunteers from the community to help grow the food. You know, people in the community are interested in growing but don't know how, or they think it's hard. So at those sites, they are able to get educated on, like, using other materials to create raised beds, use old pools, use pallets, anything to grow food, just have an opportunity in the space to show people in the community.
Chair Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the answer and learning more about that. I think as we continue to look at how to support a local food economy, I think you guys can be a good partner in how we can address the food insecurities within our cities. I look forward to hearing more about Urban Ag in your programming.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Powell and Representative Jordan, for bringing this bill forward. Appetite for Change used to be in my district, but it's no longer in my district after redistricting. And just want to applaud the work that Appetite for Change have done for our community in North Minneapolis, and not just, you know, Minneapolis, but the entire state and nationally too. Appetite for Change, you know, are, you know, nationally known for the work that they do. And going back to the question from Representative Backer at the beginning, you know, if you look at the handout here, the Community Cooks, which is before us, is one component of the different programs that they provide. Urban Ag, that Chair Vang talked about, youth training opportunities, Northside Fresh, running one of the farmers market in my district. They do a lot of great work for just not our local community there, but for the, as a model for the entire state and for the nation. And so I just want to applaud you for that. And Representative Scrava, to your point, I hope that, you know, if we get this through or not, that you and I, we participate in this so that, you know, to Representative Cha's point, teach you or show you some Hmong cooking, and you can show me some of the cooking from your cultural heritage too. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I look forward to it.
Thank you. Vice Chair Hussein.
Representative Jordan and Ms. Paul, thanks for bringing this great program forward. And what brings us together is food, cultural, communities. That's how people get together in dialogues and talk about it, you know, how delicious each community and the foods are. I would love to see this program expanded and see if we can bring in a Frogtown in St. Paul. We could have a lot of community that can, you know, that I represent will be able to participate this great, wonderful program. And I look forward, Representative Jordan, work with you and see how we can expand that.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hussein. thank you very much, Ms. Powell, for coming. You did a great job. And thank you. You're certainly making us all hungry, and I think we're all better by breaking bread together and sharing each other's worlds and growing and learning from each other. But any final comments, Representative Jordan?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I thought it was great how everyone immediately thought of that dish that is their culture, and then I loved all the sharing. And I think whether it's learning, you know, about potica at the Ely Folk School, where my friend Lucy Squire teaches cooking classes, I strongly recommend taking those. Thank you. I'm an Irish girl myself, but or whether it's your mom's chicken soup. I think my mom also has a chicken soup. Food is really a cultural connector for all of us, and I think it is ultimately one of the better ways that we learn about who we are as families. You know, the Mayans believe that people were made out of corn, and we are made out of what we eat, and so this is in some ways the most elemental part of our culture. So I really hope that you will find a place for this in your legacy bill this year, and thanks for your support.
Thank you. Thank you again for coming. I might be a Girl Scout cookie right now, then. With that, the bill is laid over. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So as Vice Chair Hussein's moving over there, I'll move that. Well, I'll let him do it since it's his bill. Representative Hussein moves that House File 1678 be laid over for possible inclusion. So we have your... Is that your motion, sir?
Yes, I move. Thank you.
So welcome to your committee, and go ahead when you're ready. We have some time. I think we can go past noon, right?
This is the best. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the best committee that I really enjoyed, you know, Legacy. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1676 is based off proposal for the Somali-led organization named Kajog that has been successful funded by Legacy and Art and the Cultural Heritage funding for the past two cycles. It has created opportunity for the cultural heritage awareness education within the Somali community and beyond, generating important dialogues between the Somali and the other community that lives with them, where there has been tension and misunderstanding. Over the past 8 years, there has been a successful in community like St. Cloud, Rochester, Wilmer, and Twin Cities, but ongoing challenge opportunity remain in those community and beyond. With an office, Twin Cities, Moorhead, Kajuk has a lot of, it's been working within our state, the greater Minnesota. They do have an office, and that's the only organization which has the capacity that can, you know, cover the whole state of Minnesota and give opportunity and working within our community. In the past, funding for the Somali Cultural Heritage Project has raised the $250,000 to $400,000, and now we're asking $2 million, which will give opportunity and to expand even more greater Minnesota, not only Twin Cities, but also the other cities that where our community have lived in the past. And Kajok has a good track record, has worked within the community, worked with our youth, and beyond within other communities. And today, if you would allow me, Mr. Chair, I have the Chair and Executive Director, Mohamed Farah, who will be able to testify on behalf of the organization.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hussein. Director Farah, welcome. Go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Good morning, Chair and members of this committee. Thank you for granting us the opportunity to present this vital bill before you. I would like to thank and express my gratitude to Representative Hussein for his leadership and advocacy for bringing this bill to your attention. My name is Mohamed Farah. I am the Executive Director of Kajog, a nationally recognized Somali youth development organization. We are dedicated to enhancing the lives of Somali Americans by utilizing education, mentorship, employment, and the arts. Established and founded in 2007, our mission is to provide community-based and culturally specific programs and services to young people and their families through education, the arts, and economic development. As a statewide organization that primarily works within the East African community across our state, we have been coordinating Somali arts and cultural heritage projects throughout Minnesota for years. Our work focuses on building trust, cohesiveness, and relationships within the Somali community and with the greater community through the arts and cultural heritage programs called Funka, which means the arts in Somali. Our Funka program includes a weekly arts club, 3 8-week immersive workshops for youth with a recognized artist, and a public arts presentation and intercultural community engagement. By using spoken word, storytelling, visual arts, and plays, we provide critical opportunities for youth to engage in intercultural dialogues, which create a vital local connections, trust, and relationships. The proposed bill will provide the necessary funds that will impact many communities in our state. Since 2015, we have been the recipients of the legacy funds through the Minnesota Humanities Center and have impacted thousands of Minnesotans across the state. We have brought people from all over, we have impacted people from all backgrounds and worked together using the arts and built long-lasting relationships between many communities. Mr. Chair, members of this committee, we have a lot of work ahead of us, particularly in Greater Minnesota, where the Somali American population is growing by the day. Intercultural dialogue opportunities are limited, resulting in a significant amount of misunderstanding, fear, mental, and sometimes physical harm. Together, we have the power to change this by considering this bill before you today. As we live in a critical time, your continued leadership and advocacy is essential and vital. The need for this bill is obvious and vital. I would like to express my appreciation to the chair and to all of you and to Representative Hussein. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to call on Chani Abdulqadir, who is a parent, and would like to say a few words regarding the program.
Thank you, Director Farrar.
And if you allow me, I have one more testifier.
Yep. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry I didn't catch your name, so just please state it for the record and go ahead when you're ready, please. Okay.
Chani Abdulqadir. Good afternoon. My name is Chani, and I'm a proud parent of a child who participated in our art program that focuses on cultural heritage. I'm grateful for the opportunity to testify today and about this program and how it's impacted my child and our family. As a second-generation immigrant, I've struggled to connect with my parents' culture and pass it on to my child. However, through this program, my child is able to learn, is able to bridge the generational gap and learn about their parents' culture, and then also teach me a bit too. They've learned about the history, traditions, and values that have shaped our family's identity and heritage. Not only did this program help my child connect with his culture, but also emphasize the importance of connecting with people from different cultures. He's learned how to appreciate and respect other cultures, which helped develop him into an empathetic and a better global citizen. Through the art program, my child was able to express themselves creatively and learn about their identity and the world around them. It's a life-changing experience for them, and I'm grateful for the dedicated educators and staff who've made it possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice job. You did great.
Yeah, thank you. You did a great job. And I just want to explain also the word means kejok. It means stay away, or, you know, like, it's telling, like, kids, stay away the problems. Like, it's kind of like guidance.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the word is a Somali term, and the Mr. Chair, sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
Yep. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the word kajog is a Somali term, and the idea, the purpose of the word is to get young people to get away from negative influences and really put them in the right direction, which is education. So it's a really strong word in the community in terms of alerting yourself and really putting yourself on the right path.
Thank you. Representative Becker.
Yeah, just one question here. The additional increase, because if I heard you correct, we're going from 400,000 a year to a million. So could you just give us where that additional $600,000 would be used each year? What's your goal? What's your vision? What's your plan? Thank you, Chair.
Director Farah.
Mr. Chair, the purpose of the extra funding is actually to connect and work within more cities in greater Minnesota that we have not done so previously. And the majority of the funding of that funding actually goes to artists, local artists that will work with young people, not just from the Somali community, but for different sort of communities to really build a cohesiveness within those communities. So really it's about engaging some of the cities that we have not engaged previously, such as International Falls and other communities where we have seen the Somali communities are moving to.
Representative Becker.
Nothing else.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. You know, I just want to thank the state of Minnesota, you know, for continuing to invest into all communities, especially the immigrant communities of culture, such like the Somali and the Southeast Asian, especially the Hmong communities. You know, for the last 45 years, you know, we've seen the investment in our community, and, you know, we have 9 legislators today here at the state capitol because of those investments. So I just want to thank those legislators before us who allowed us to be here. So thank you.
So I just tell me the kind of the little bit of the path, because I think last biennium there's a couple couple pots of money where funding is available, and I think you got did you get a historical grant or humanities during last cycle, or how did, because we have some cultural fund that we started two bienniums ago, and then last biennium we added quite a bit to it. And we're with others, Vice Chair Hussein's and others' leadership, we're hoping to add to that fund this year too. So what was your funding path like last biennium?
Mr. Chair, all of our funding went through Minnesota Humanities Center every year. Last cycle, the funding went into a pot of funding where everybody had to compete, and that's sort of how it was set, which was a little bit different from the previous years. And so we did receive some funding from that, and so we are continuing our work. Yep. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you able to apply for any arts money, too? Because I know part of your work is art, so we do quite a bit in the grants art space as well. Have you applied for art grants?
It's the Art Society.
We have applied for arts previously. We've been more. This program is a little bit different than sort of the rest of the RFPs that are out, and so it's a very unique program. And we're using art in a way that is different from you know what we've seen, and so that's why we have been partnering with Minnesota Humanities Center on this and since 2015.
Thank you, Director Farah, and very much appreciate your work, and I followed you, and I think you're doing what you said you're doing. You're spreading the word. And as a legislator, I've been lucky enough to serve on Representative Lee's committee and see the state, and you know, I'm excited to see the change that you're speaking of. You know, you get in different communities, and you know Minnesota's changing. So I respect and value your comments. And Vice Chair Hussein, any final comments?
Yes, I just want to thank all my colleagues for giving us the opportunity to hear this bill. And I am passionate about this organization for many, many years because they've been helping for our community and our youth and giving a leadership and opportunity for them to stay away from the problems that we've seen. And it's better for us to invest in our youth. The only way we can, you know, empower them. That's what I'm passionate about also. And Mohammed, he forgot to share with you all, and he hosts a biggest, largest Somali Independence Day on Lake Street, which is approximately 100 Somali American get together on Lake Street for a couple days to celebrate for Somali Independence Day and 4th of July, American Independence Day. So, and brings businesses together, communities together, arts together, singers together, and cultural. So it's open for all Minnesotans, and that's how we can learn one another. And there's going to be a food, there's going to be a music, there's going to be a dance. I would love to invite you all, and I will send you an email following up when that comes to close. And thanks for having us all. And thank you for that. For wonderful words there.
Thank you very much. With that, Vice Chair, you'll lay over your bill. We'll lay over your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, everyone, thank you for your attendance this morning, and this is a great discussion. Representative Scraba.
Do we meet this Friday?
Yes. I must warn you a little. So it's... we're going to have a full agenda on Friday, and we're going to go through a lot of bills. And then if you're blessed like I am, well, you get to spend the later afternoon on Chair Lee's committee going through, I think he has 45 bills. But Representative Hurd.
Chair Lilly, some of us do have multiple committees happening at the same time, so just aware in case we're voting comes out of committee.
Thank you, Representative Hurd. Great question. We will not be voting on the bills, but I'd really... I think it means a lot if you can all do your best to be in the room and attend out of respect to the presenters and also for the gathering information for us making decisions later. So thank you very much, everyone. With that, we are adjourned.